In fact, it's a crime. It's a crime.
Here come the drums.
C-R-I-M-E-W-A-V. You're rolling with the Crime Wave, the internet's first and only podcast devoted to the crime short story. I'm Seth Harwood, your host, the first name in crime podcast fiction, and I'm ready to bring you this week's story. The Crime Wave is produced by Mystery Dog, Aldo Calcagno, and it is not safe for your minivans. That means it might contain swearing, violence, and all types of shit.
My Father's Secret, written and read by Simon Wood. My old man didn't really keep secrets. He just never said anything. My mum was always saying, don't ask your father questions, he won't appreciate it. He wasn't the kind of man you coerced into revealing something he didn't want to reveal. His construction background made him mountainous. He had the kind of handshake that came from cutting rebar with hand shears, and came with a backhand to match. People were saying I was like him. True, I had his height and build. They also said we sounded alike, although I never heard the likeness. But I did lack one attribute that no one denied. His coldness. Thank God. I got to study Pop a lot soon as we worked together in his hardware store with my two younger brothers. I watched him deal with the customers with the same lack of affection he reserved for his family. It was amazing how he exuded cautions. Customers knew better than to haggle over returns like they would with me, Tommy, or Art. And I came to realize I only knew my father through observation. I was 22 and I knew nothing about him. I didn't know if he played high school football, gone to college, or how he'd even met my mum. I wondered how much she really knew about her husband. None of us were allowed into his hermit world until last year. It was February and Minneapolis was struggling to throw off a winter when Dad's phone rang in the office. We were forbidden from answering that phone. It was a private line for his use only. Dad's instructions were clear. Don't touch that phone. Don't take a message. If I'm not here, let it ring. And don't come in when I'm on a call. We all always knew when the phone rang. Dad had had bells hooked up throughout the store and warehouse and even in the John, so he could hear it everywhere. Everyone froze when it rang and waited for him to lock himself into the office. No one ever said anything during the calls, customs included. I don't know why, it wasn't like we were going to hear anything, but that was the kind of respect Dad commanded. Dad emerged from his office 10 minutes later. Vincent, I looked up. Here. Dad held the office door open and closed it behind me. Sit down. Dad was grim-faced. Anything wrong? Dad shook his head and sat on his desk. I've got to go to California and you're coming too. I poked up. After every closed door call came a business trip. My father never divulged any details about the trips other than they were for business. For me to be included was an honour indeed. You've grown into an insensible young man and an asset to me. These were hard words for my father to say. Affection like the dead was kept 6 feet under. It's about time you got involved in the other side of our business. Thanks, Dad. My mouth was arid dry and the words stuck on the way out. When do we leave? Now. Leaving Sacramento International, I peeled off my coat. California's warmth was a vast difference from the frozen grey of Minneapolis. Dad led us to our rental car, except we hadn't rented the car. Our car was in the short-term parking lot. Dad knew exactly which was ours, unlocked the trunk on a 4-year-old Taurus with Nevada plates. I went to put my bag in the back. Dad blocked my view of the trunk with his body on the back seat. He barked. More secrets. I frowned. He was giving me nothing as usual. Nothing was ever a picnic with Dad. It was better to sit back and just enjoy the ride. I dumped my bag on the back seat and slipped into the passenger seat while Dad fiddled with something in the trunk. The Ford rocked with his efforts. I stared at his form in the vanity mirror on the back of the sunshade. The open trunk shielded his body. I caught flashes of movement in the gap created between trunk door hinges. When he finished, he joined me in the car. Where did the car come from? Business contacts. He gunned the engine. Dad didn't use a map. He knew where he was going, which is more than I could say. We end up in Midtown, close to the rail lines. I was getting used to the unusual. I wasn't surprised to find out we weren't holed up in a Radisson. Dad parked behind a 3-bedroom Victorian. We unloaded the car. I grabbed my bag off the back seat and Dad retrieved his overnight duffel from the trunk. He hadn't checked in a duffel at the airport. Don't forget the groceries. I gathered up the box. We trawled the aisles of a local Raley's, Dad singling out the damnedest things. He picked up coffee, a coffee pot, caffeine pills, a can opener, canned goods, energy bars, a camp chairs and a camp stove, along with other assorted oddities. I examined our eclectic buys as I followed it up to the back steps. Dad opened the door using a key he'd removed from an inner envelope marked keys. We let ourselves in. The place was empty and smelled musty. I went to put the groceries in the kitchen when Dad stopped me. Not there. Where then? Upstairs. We won't be out of our room much. Dad picked up the mail off the doormat. This way. We settled into a third floor bedroom facing the street with no bathroom and no bed. I dumped the groceries on the floor, glad to be relieved of the weight, let my bag slip off my shoulder. Dad put down the mail and descended on the groceries, taking what he wanted. I noticed the letters weren't addressed to him. I never heard of Alfred Taylor. We've got power, so get some coffee going. I did as I was told. While I made coffee, Dad positioned the camp chairs in front of the window. He adjusted the Venetian blinds to slits and dropped into one of the chairs. From the duffel, he pulled out a pair of binoculars. One pair he put on the chair for me. The last of the preparations was a notebook and pen in the chair's side pocket. Dad, what are we doing here? He didn't reply. Instead, he focused the binoculars on the house outside. Some might have thought my father hadn't heard me over the brewing coffee pot, but I knew better. The whitening of his knuckles was all the acknowledgement I needed. He'd answer when he was good and ready. Coffee, Dad. I took my seat next to my father and placed the mug on the floor next to his chair. Dad kept the binoculars trained. See that battleship grey, 2-storey across the street? The house directly opposite ours was the same era as our Victorian we'd taken up residence in, but in much better condition. Mature eucalyptus trees, shredding their bark, marked the corners of the lot. Yeah, what about it? I want you to watch it. Don't take your eyes off it. What am I watching for? We're looking for a man. Who? I'll tell you when we see him. Now just watch. Obviously, our business in Sacramento had nothing to do with a trade show, a client, or the hardware industry in general. Are we on a stakeout? Dad exhaled with a growl. Just shut up and do as I tell you. Use your ears and your eyes, and maybe, just maybe, you'll learn something. Okay? Okay. My question had been redundant. Of course we were on a stakeout. I'd seen enough cop films to know. But that was where my dilemma lay. Why were we staking out some stranger's house? Was Dad a cop or a fed? Was that why he kept his life so secret? My gut told me otherwise. With paralyzing fear, I guessed we weren't on the side of the angels. My father, and now I, were playing for the Black Hats. I picked up the binoculars, studied the house across the street. 20 minutes ticked by, nothing happened. People passed, vehicles passed, but no one stopped at the grey house across the street. I checked my watch. It was 4:20. If our guy was regular working stiff, then I reckon he wasn't going to be home for at least another hour. I put the binoculars on the windowsill, stood and stretched, moaning as I did so. "Did I say you could get up?" Dad growled from behind his binoculars. "No, but nothing's happened. Nothing's going to happen for a good hour. Sit down." "Dad, come on. Sit the fuck down. You're killing my concentration." There was no point in arguing, and I retook my seat. "You can have 2-minute break every hour." Just before 5, the mailman came. Dad noted the time in the notebook. 6 o'clock came and went, and Dad got excited at 7:02. This is him. I stiffened in my seat. Look at him. Study him. Be sure you recognise him in a crowd. I snatched up my binoculars and trained them on the man heading for the grey house. The sun had gone down, but there was good street lighting. He was around 40, soft-looking with a paunch and spectacles. He was nothing spectacular, and I couldn't see why he deserved all the attention. Dad didn't speak until the man was inside the house. "Right, this is what we've been waiting for. We watch spectacles. If you want to piss, do it now. I need both of our eyes on him. We can't make a move until we know exactly when he comes and goes. Understand?" I nodded. Spectacles didn't act like he was expecting a stakeout. He was far too relaxed. He entered his house and put the lights on. One by one, the room lights went up. He didn't even bother pulling the drapes. For 2 hours, we watched him come and go his business, watching TV with his feet up, eating dinner, drinking juice straight from the bottle. At 9:15, he left the house. "Do we follow?" Dad shook his head. "Don't we want to know where he's going? He can fuck alley cats for all I care. I just want to know what his habits are while we're here. Shall I get some food on?" "No. I just need you to keep watch." He handed me the notebook. "I'm going out." Dad slipped his jacket on. "Where are you going?" Dad frowned and left. The door slammed and I returned to my task. My jaw dropped. Dad was walking south on Spectacles' side of the street. When he came to Spectacles' house, he ducked inside a side alley and disappeared into the backyard. 5 minutes later, he rejoined the street and continued walking south. I waited for him to return. "We've taken his seat," Dad said. "You can get that food going now." "Why did you go into his house?" "Food," Dad insisted. "Dad, I can't learn by just watching. I need some explanation." Dad mulled the idea over. "When the time comes, we can't let him get away. If he bolts, I need to know if he has an escape route. He doesn't. He's boxed in by 6-foot fences. Now, food." Dad didn't want people thinking anyone was living in the Victorian, so I had to make the food at the rear of the house. I heated 2 cans of pork and beans on the camper stove and brewed more coffee. We ate our food in silence and in the dark, watching an empty house do nothing. Regardless of our cause, glamour wasn't part of the job description. "Take these," Dad said, tapping my arm. He gave me 4 caffeine tablets. I took them with the coffee, hoping to wash the artificial taste off my canned dinner away. "We're going to have to stay awake all night and all tomorrow," I frowned. "But seeing as it's 2 of us, we can afford to take shifts, as long as you don't fuck up." Just like Dad, no concession came without a price. "Remember, if you did this alone, you wouldn't have the luxury of sleep or toilet facilities. You'd eat, piss, shit where you sit. You're getting off easy." Lesson over. We settled back into our routine of window gazing. However, I wasn't glazing over as so much. I kept sharp, not simply by staring at the house, but examining the environment. I catalogued the image outside our window, reading the outside world the same way as I would read a line of text. And with stunning admiration, I came to realise how Dad could just sit for hours on end. Time passed swiftly as molasses on a blanket. As weekday nightlife drew to a close, traffic dried to a trickle. By 1:30, street activity had reduced to black and whites on routine patrols. I checked my watch. It was nearly 4 and no sign of spectacles. Apparently it was a night owl. What if he doesn't come home, I asked. He will. But what if he doesn't? He has no reason not to. He didn't leave with anything, so it's unlikely he's done a runner. So he'll come home and we'll wait. I hope you're right. Dad examined me up and down. Take a break, get some sleep. What if he comes? Dad's face creased, his closest impression of a smile. A second ago, you were wondering if he would return. Yeah, well, if you're going to be any good at this game, you've got to learn some patience and how to roll with the punches. If he comes, I'll call you. Okay. I bunked down on the floor thinking I was too full of caffeine to sleep. I was dead to the world within minutes. Dad woke me at 7:15. It seemed as if I'd been asleep minutes rather than hours, and I felt the worse for it. I collapsed into my seat. He's back. Spectacles let himself into his house. He didn't bother with breakfast and went straight to bed. I hope this is the start of a pattern, Dad said. And it was. For the next 3 days, Spectacles was as regular as oat bran. He left at 9 in the evening and returned around 7 a.m. He slept in, went for a late breakfast and ran errands. We did indeed have ourselves a pattern. Spectacles had just left for his 4th night in a row when Dad said, we're going to do this thing in the morning. What thing? Get our shit together and pack up the car. When it's done, get your head down. We've got an early start. You know all we need to know in the morning. I didn't argue and did as I was told. I packed our junk in the car. The duffel was the last thing left. I got as far as grabbing the handles when Dad's pipe wrench grip crushed my wrist. Leave it. This one stays. I left it. We slept. It was the first time in days. So far, I snatched an odd hour here and there, relying on caffeine and adrenaline to keep me going. My heart was redlining since the second day, and a caffeine headache slammed me for every 3 or 4 hours. I felt as though someone had crapped in my head and forgotten to flush. But not Dad. I didn't know how he did it. Like me, he could have won Sacramento's Mr. Hobo pageant, but his focus was still razor keen. Just looking at him drained me. Dad woke me with a tap and a hey. He wasn't tapping me with his hand, but with the butt of an automatic. I recoiled from the weapon, sleep confusing the situation. Take it, Dad thrust the pistol at me. I took it, sliding my finger over the trigger. Dad released his hold, and I took the weight of the gun unassisted. You fired a 45 before, haven't you? A few years back, my brother and I spent a year in the reserves at Dad's request. We'd been taught how to use firearms. He said it was our duty, but our duty to whom? I fired a Colt before, I replied. Which was true, but nothing like the Colt I held. Our drill sergeants would not have been impressed by the piece of hardware I was examining. The 45 was old and worn. The oil-black grip showed bare metal and covered in scuff marks and scratches. It looked as if it had been used as a makeshift hammer at some point. Don't worry about its condition. It's been cleaned and checked out. What do I need a gun for? Come here. I stood next to my father at the window. We're going to park in front of Spectacle's house and wait for him. When he goes for his keys, we'll shoot him. Shoot him? Put at least 4 or 5 shots in him. Don't rely on one. Put the shots in the back of his head. If you think you're going to miss, put them in his back. Dad, ditch the guns there. We don't keep mementos. Mementos? Christ, Dad, you're talking about murder. Dad's hand shot out and snatched my throat. His momentum slammed me against the wall as he stuck his automatic against my temple. We're not talking about murder. We're talking about professional here. I'm a shooter. That's what I do. I kill people who I've been told to kill. You can be a shooter too, if you've got the guts for it. If you don't, I'll put a bullet in you now. Dad snapped off the safety. So what's it going to be? I'd already given him my answer. He looked down and smiled. My Colt was jammed in his guts. His gun slipped to his side and his foot then grasped, changed to a pat on my cheek. You'll do. You're ready. Let's go. If I followed him, I was crossing a line, one from which I could never return. I went without trepidation. Why, I don't know, but I did, without a second's thought. I was going to kill a man I didn't know, and I wasn't bothered. We waited in the car for spectacles outside his house. We had the windows open, and it was a pleasure to breathe the air instead of the stench of our own breath, sweat, and gas. 10 to 7. He'd be along at any minute. Why aren't we wearing gloves? No need. We don't have rap sheets. The cops only have DMV records to fall back on, and then they've only got a thumbprint, and we're out of state. Essentially, we're foreigners. What about the guns? Don't sweat it. These guns have had so many owners, the poor bastards who legally owned them won't remember when they were stolen. I didn't have to ask who our employer was. These weren't the tactics of law enforcement. Organised crime operate this way. He's here. Spectacles walked straight towards us. He didn't notice us and reached inside his pants for his keys. We go when he's got his back to us. Don't chase him. We do this on the porch. I couldn't speak. My brain blistered with adrenaline. I was tense. My finger tightened on the trigger. My gaze followed Spectacles up the path to his front door. Go. We slipped out from the car. Stray vehicles sped past. The sidewalks were clear. We strode with conviction, power and pace. We knew our job and we were going to do it. Spectacles stuck his key in the lock. We were 10 feet behind him, at the base of the porch. We didn't give him a warning, we just opened fire. My dad and I, for once, not father and son, or boss and employee, but partners, pumped bullet after bullet into Spectacles. I didn't falter. I went for the head, like my father. Spectacles' skull disintegrated. Globs of brain and bone splattered the front door. 10 shots made oatmeal of his head, and we dropped the automatics before Spectacles hit the ground. Our job done. We raced back to the car. A dumbstruck woman walking her dog was rooted to the spot. She stared directly at us, but I saw a blank sheet behind her eyes. She wouldn't remember a thing when the cops got to her. Dad gunned the engine and floored it. We went straight to the airport, left the car where we found it. Dad told me we didn't have to worry about the car or our camp gear. The car and the contents would be disposed of and the Victorian would be sanitised. He would pay me out of his share. Not that that information was important. What counted was what he said last. You did a good job, Vincent. Real good. I'm proud of you. Seven months later, summer ran off overnight and fall stood in. It wasn't snowing, but it wasn't far away. I'd already joined Dad on another hit. It went more smoothly than the first, and I'd learned even more. Dad's phone had been ringing a lot lately. But he hadn't gone on any business trips, and neither had I. He took the calls in his usual manner, and I, like everyone else, was locked out. I knew there was a problem, and I wasn't happy to sit back. Thursday afternoons, Dad always went to the bank, so I followed. He took care of business inside while I parked in a red zone across the street and waited. Normally he returned to the store, but he didn't, not this time. He took the highway out of town. 20 miles out, he pulled over into a rest stop. I don't know if he knew I was shadowing him, but it seemed like it. I followed him into the rest stop and parked as far back as I could. I watched him. He did nothing. He sat and gazed at a bleak sky rolling by. I got out. The F-150's passenger window was open and I leaned through. Dad? He turned and I pumped 3 rounds into his face, blowing out the driver's side window. I left the 357 on the bench seat next to him and raced back to my car. Dad had slipped up in Vegas a year before. The feds had made indictments. They had a blood trail, and eventually it would lead back to him. That trail had to stop. I knew this from the call. I'd answered Dad's phone. He'd been out, and the damn thing had rung for 10 minutes straight. They thought I was him. Maybe our voices did sound alike after all. When they realised who I was, they offered me a promotion, and I accepted. Now when the phone rings in the store, it's me they wait for. No one answers Vincent's phone.
Thank you for listening to The Crime Wave. I'm your host, Seth Harwood. I hope you'll check out the rest of the stories here on Crime Wave and tell your friends about it. It's the CRIMEWAV. Help pass the word, register at our site so that you can participate in the forums and add comments to the episodes. You can email us with questions or comments at info@crimewave.com. Aldo, the mystery dog, and I will get your email and we'll get back to you right quick. You can also call the K7 line, 206-350-4998, to leave comments or feedback. And if you leave a great message, we'll even play it at the end of a show. So drop a line, hop on the website, visit often, spread the word, and thank you for stopping by The Crime Wave.
In fact, it's a crime. It's a crime.